Welcome to Healthy Her, the podcast designed to inspire women to lead lives filled with health and happiness. I'm Dr. Amy Brenner, your host discussing nutrition, hormones, aesthetics, sexual health, and more. Join us each week as we dive into feeling better, looking better, and living better. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our 100th episode of Healthy Her. I can't believe we've done this 100 times. It wouldn't be so successful if it wasn't all of you for listening and sharing and telling me your comments in the office. And this episode really goes out to you because all of you contributed to the content of this episode by submitting your questions in person, online, through our Contact Us forum, and also through the podcast. So let's get started. The first question I have is probably the most common question we get in person, and that is, would you ever open an office outside of the Cincinnati area? And the answer is yes. So the first thing we have coming is we're hopefully on track to open our second location in Kenwood, and we're slated to open on June 1st. So fingers crossed that that all goes through. Next up in 2025 will be a location north of Cincinnati in one of the Dayton suburbs. And stay tuned because there's a lot to come on other locations. So hopefully you follow us on social or get our emails to find out about other locations in the Midwest. All right. What is your favorite treatment you have done on yourself? And that one's hard because I am probably one of our best patients here. I definitely practice what I preach and have done most of the things that we offer in our office. So I would say that this answer really fluctuates as what my problem spots are. I will say at age 55, I do feel like the analogy I give is it's like a old tire. You spring a leak here, patch that, something else pops up. So I feel like there's always something going on. But my latest favorite aesthetic treatment is, it's actually two, is a combo of doing Morpheus, which is RF microneedling to tighten the skin. And then Sculptra, which is an injectable, kind of like filler, but it's really a biostimulator to stimulate your own collagen. I think we get as good or as close as you can get as being a non-surgical facelift. So I really love this combo of RF microneedling with Morpheus combined with Sculptra. Okay, why and when did you start HRT? Not really sure if this is directed towards me or to our patients. If you actually go back and listen to episode one of how I started this practice, you'll get a lot more detailed information on my story. But in a nutshell, I felt like when I turned 40, somebody had pulled the rug out from under me. So I did a lot of testing then of really all aspects of my hormones and was able to get off some prescription medication, started some things and felt like it was magic. And I didn't even feel like at 40, I was that messed up, if you will. But after I fixed myself, I decided I have to do this and incorporate this into my practice, which is why I left my traditional OBGYN practice and started this type of care here in our practice. And that was about 15 years ago. How did you meet your husband? If you ask him, he will say in a bar. If you ask me, because I don't really like that answer, I will say we met in a restaurant. So it was actually a bar slash restaurant. If you're from Cincinnati, it was Arthur's in Hyde Park. And we actually just this past weekend had our 23-year anniversary. Next question. What age should I stop HRT? This is a really common question I get from patients that we are treating with hormone therapy. And the answer is till death do you part. Long gone are those days of you need to use the lowest dose for the shortest period of time and definitely get off of it at age 65. That data was from the Women's Health Initiative using drugs like Premarin, which is oral horse estrogen, and a synthetic progestin, Prempro. And Prempro showed increased risks of
stroke, thromboembolism, more cardiovascular disease, synthetic progestins. There was a slight increased risk of breast cancer, but we never prescribe those. And so that data was with synthetic progestins and not with bioidentical hormones. And if you go back and listen to What Gave Hormones the Bad Rap, where I explain in detail about the Women's Health Initiative, but bioidentical hormones have a lot of health benefits of helping with cardiovascular disease, keeping your vagina and vulva healthy, your bone health and brain health. And so I tell people that you should continue these hormones for as long as you want to maintain the benefits. And so if you're seeing a doctor that says you need to get off your bioidentical hormones at a certain age, you are given wrong information. Next question. Why are so many doctors against pellets? If you don't know what pellets are a form of delivery, and they look like a little grain of rice that we usually put in the adipose tissue in your bottom or sometimes in the love handles. And it's a delivery mechanism for testosterone and or estradiol. And there are pros and cons of pellet therapy compared to creams, injections, patches. Pellet therapy has a lot of benefits as well. The main thing is they really work for symptom replacement. But why are so many doctors against it? I think a lot of people that have hormone clinics and do pellets tend to overdose people. So it's not really the pellet therapy, but rather the practitioner who's putting the pellet or the pelleter. More is not always better. I think that testosterone does a lot of good things. And if you go back and listen to some of my podcasts of testosterone is not just for bodybuilders. There are other podcasts specifically on testosterone, but more testosterone is not always better. Testosterone is a bell-shaped curve. And there are definitely symptoms of low testosterone, but too much testosterone can lead to unwanted symptoms as well, including low libido, unwanted hair on the face, hair loss, anger. And so if people are getting those side effects, they have too much. In my experience of seeing patients from other practices, if the only thing you do in your practice is pellets, then every symptom is going to say, let's go up on the dose of I'm not sleeping. Let's go up on the dose. My libido's not right. Let's go up on the dose. Instead of coming to a practice that looks at all aspects of your care, including looking at thyroid, adrenals, insulin resistance, gut health, nutrient deficiencies, more testosterone or more estrogen is not always the answer. And that's where I see patients coming from other practices. Sometimes it's an issue with dose. So I think that's where pellets got really a bad name, is there's a lot of people out there that are really overdosing on testosterone and or estrogen. Next question. What are your thoughts on microdosing GLP-1s as a wellness option? I love this option, which is one of the reasons why we actually prefer the compounded GLP-1s over FDA-approved drugs, where everybody's on the same protocol. Versus with compounding, we use way lower doses and really just use a little low dose to take away that food noise. There's a lot of data on these drugs coming out of a lot of other health benefits. I did a podcast specifically with Dr. Carrie Reller on the health benefits of GLP-1. So I would recommend you refer to that for more information. But in a nutshell, I love microdosing GLP-1s. Next question. Once you have a hysterectomy, do you have to get a yearly annual? I think this question, I'm going to expand upon it a little bit, is I think a lot of patients hear, I don't need a pap smear if I've had a hysterectomy, so I don't need an annual. And an annual exam is the time for your provider to look at your whole medical history, review your medications. Are there any medications that need to be adjusted or can you come off now? Looking at any screening health maintenance tests of, are you due for a bone scan to look for your bone health? Are you due for a mammogram, a colonoscopy, some type of cardiac screening, doing a full physical, including a breast exam, as well as a pelvic exam? So although you don't need a pap smear after you've had a hysterectomy, I still recommend women get an annual exam. And I think this, although this wasn't the question, this ties into these new guidelines, or they're not so new anymore, for pap smears, of telling women that they only need a pap smear every 3 years. And although that is the guideline for the population, and if somebody's never had an abnormal pap smear, you know, they could get by with that. But I think people interpret that as, I don't need an annual exam and a pelvic exam. So you still need somebody to look at your female organs and do a pelvic exam. Whether or not they take the cells for a pap smear is a completely different conversation. These new pap smear guidelines have, in my opinion, have really done a disservice to women, because women hear, I don't need a pap smear for 3 years, and then they spread it out. And I see women all the time who haven't had pap smears or a pelvic exam for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Is it too late to start hormone therapy if you're over age 65? And the short answer is absolutely not. I think people who are non-hormone experts get this confused. And although there is something called a timing hypothesis that women should start hormone therapy at a minimum as close to the timing of menopause as possible. And the reason is because hormones do so many good things on our body. They help with brain health. They help with cardiovascular health. They keep your bones healthy. They keep your vagina healthy. And so if you go many years without hormone therapy, you're at risk for cardiovascular disease, at risk for osteopenia or osteoporosis. You're at risk for atrophic vaginitis, or genitourinary symptoms of menopause. Or if you don't know what that means, it can mean your vagina is shriveled up. And so that's what being without hormones does. It's just a lot harder if somebody's already developed severe atrophy of the vagina or significant osteoporosis to reverse that. It doesn't mean that hormones are contraindicated. It just means that, unfortunately, somebody's already developed these diseases, and it's just a lot more work and harder to overcome that instead of starting it at the time of menopause to prevent those diseases. The other thing is if somebody already has cardiovascular disease, we might just need to go a little slower with initiating these types of therapy. In a nutshell, I tell my patients it's never too late. You might just not get as many benefits as somebody did if they would have started at the time of menopause or even earlier, because in that late perimenopause, bone loss is occurring then. Coronary vessels may be starting to develop plaque with those rapidly declining estrogen levels. So starting hormones as close to the time of menopause is ideal. Why are your supplements different from over-the-counter? It's not just my supplements. In our office, we have only carried pharmaceutical-grade supplements. And the difference between that and something over-the-counter is to make a pharmaceutical-grade supplement, it has to go through rigorous testing, and the supplement companies have to make sure that it has what it says it has and nothing else until the expiration date. Again, I did a podcast, one of the early on ones, about the difference between supplements. So you can refer to that, where we expand in great detail of why over-the-counter it is not as good. I see this all the time. We check, for instance, vitamin D levels. And I see patients all the time saying, oh, I take vitamin D, and I check their level and it looks like they're not taking anything. Next question, does hormone therapy affect endometriosis? And the answer is yes. Nobody 100% knows what causes endometriosis, but we think it has to do with estrogen stimulating growth of endometriosis. From a functional medicine standpoint, it could be due to an estrogen dominant type picture, which is why higher dose progesterones could be used to help with that, and why in the traditional medicine world, progestins and high dose progestins can help treat endometriosis. The definitive therapy for endometriosis is a hysterectomy. And a lot of times when I will do a hysterectomy for endometriosis, if somebody can tolerate it, I like to withhold estrogen for about 6 months before initiating estrogen therapy after the definitive treatment of a complete hysterectomy. So the answer is yes. All right, here's a personal question. If you wouldn't have gone to medical school, what else might you have done? And that's an easy answer, is I couldn't decide if I wanted to be a science major in college or I wanted to be an education major and be a teacher like my mom, dad, brothers, and sisters. So I probably would have taught high school biology, but that's one thing that I really love is teaching other practitioners of how to do this type of medicine. And as we expand and grow into other locations, I hope that that will be a part of my role of teaching other providers how to do this type of medicine so we can help a lot more people. Did you know in med school you wanted to be a gynecologist? And the answer is no. I actually thought I wanted to be a neurosurgeon, believe it or not, until I started doing the rotations. And then I really fell in love with women's health because it's just, it's complicated medicine of doing hormones. And I really like the combination of doing surgery and in general, really making a difference in people's lives. In general, it's a happy space in medicine versus the neurosurgery rotation was just a different vibe and a lot of brain trauma and accidents and things like that. So for all of those reasons, I really liked OBGYN. What is the success rate of your lichen sclerosis treatments? Again, nobody 100% knows what causes lichen sclerosis, but it's a really debilitating disease for women that can cause itching and burning and pain. And the standard treatment that most GYNs use to treat lichen sclerosis is clobetasol. And certainly I can offer our patients clobetasol as well. And in the early stages of lichen sclerosis, clobetasol helps a lot of people. But long-term clobetasol use has some downsides. Is for a lot of people, it stops working and it doesn't stop the disease process. What that means is the labia can then start scarring to the labia majora. The skin over the clitoris can cover the clitoris and lead to clitoral phimosis. And so a lot of women come to see us really from all over the country for a different option to treat lichen sclerosis. And what I will do is use a laser, and the laser makes tiny little holes in the tissue. And then when your body heals, it regenerates new healthy tissue. There's actually some published data on this treatment, as well as using growth factors, either from your own blood or from human cellular tissue products that has a lot more growth factors, and injecting it. And again, it helps grow new healthy tissue. And knock on wood, I will say our treatment has been 100% successful. I don't think I've ever had a patient who has told me that it didn't help them. The caveat though is when somebody comes to see us, if somebody's newly diagnosed with lichen sclerosis, they might only need a couple treatments. And we usually do a treatment every month until all of the symptoms have resolved. Versus if somebody's had this for many, many years and have significant abnormalities of their vulva, and lichen sclerosis is really widespread and cause a lot of scarring, it might just take a lot of treatments. Hopefully we'll continue with our success rate of really being able to help everybody. And I think that's it for today. Thank you so much for sending in your questions. Still send in your questions, and we can do this periodically because this was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Her. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a quick 5-star review on your podcast platform. Your feedback means the world to us and helps others discover our show. Do you have questions or want to discuss a particular topic? You can reach us by emailing ask@dramiebrenner.com or calling 513-204-8403 and leaving a voicemail. We might feature your question or comment in an upcoming episode, so don't miss out on the chance to be a part of the conversation. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. We appreciate your support and can't wait to have you back with us next time. Take care, and remember, your healthy her journey begins with you. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute medical advice, the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services. No patient-physician relationship is formed. The information in the podcast and any references, material, or links are at the sole discretion of the listener and not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not delay or disregard obtaining medical advice for any medical diagnosis or issues that they may have and should seek medical care or advice from their healthcare provider for any such conditions.